welcome to KETR's Locker Room for the week of May 21st through May 24th. I'm Cooper Welch, and joining me once again this week is Ryan Billis, my co-host. Taylor Phelps is still out, and he should be back sometime next week or the week after that. All right, today's show, Billis, we're talking about Robert Griffin III, or RG3 as he's affectionately called. He's getting married on July 6th, and he's getting a lot of gifts from NFL fans, so there's some controversy about that. We're also going to talk Tony Romo getting back surgery today, and then we're going to finish off the show with some NBA news, including the draft lottery tonight and the playoffs and the Rangers. A lot of stuff going on with the Rangers right now, a lot of questions, especially with more injuries to the pitching. But first, let's start off with our normal first segment of the week, controversial questions. So, as I said, RG3 is getting married on July 6th to his fiancée, Rebecca Lidicote, who's been engaged to since, I think, October of 2010. I can't remember. It was sometime in 2010.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah. And he's currently registered at Bed Bath & Beyond, which is funny. That's the only place he's registered.
Well, it's really kind of funny because you expect someone like that to be registered at a higher-end type store. But here's kind of what's going on is fans are finding his registry online, and they are buying things on his list for him.
Yeah.
Just like as if he were a normal person making normal money, people are buying him gifts to get him ready for marriage. You know, generally the tradition has started, you know, the older generation takes care of the, you know, younger generation by getting them off on their feet the right way. But for a guy like Robert Griffin III, who just signed a contract worth over $21 million,
yeah,
it's a little different when fans who make, 90% less money are giving him gifts. So critics are coming out saying, hey, should he accept these gifts? Should he give them to charity? What do you think, Coop?
Yeah, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of stuff going around that he should give it to charity, or that he should just return the gifts and give people back their money. But you have to remember, these are people doing it of their own free will. They said, hey, we want to help out Robert Griffin III. I know it's a new marriage, and this would just be cool. We really appreciate all he's done for Washington. So here's a gift from us. Right. Now, you could say that gift would just come in the sum of $21 million, like you said. And a lot of people say it's the rich getting richer. But I don't know. I mean, I think personally, if I gave him a gift, I wouldn't want him to then just turn around and give it to charity. I think the best idea that could happen right now, the best situation, is if he says, hey, instead of giving me money, I'm going to set up this website and this foundation. Give money to this for my wedding present. This is a big gift to me by giving to these charities like Boys and Girls Club or things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the cool thing. I don't think he'll do that.
Or even in the wake of all these natural disasters, give funds to Oklahoma or, you know, stuff like that. There's kind of two sides of the story. It's one, Robert Griffin, does he really, you know, people are saying, you know, he doesn't really need these gifts. It's not, you know, obviously he doesn't need the gifts.
Yeah, of course.
But there's the two sides. Does he deserve a normal wedding like everyone else? Does he deserve to have that? Just like everybody else gets wedding showers, they get gifts registered for. And everybody gets to do that. So why shouldn't he get to go out and register for gifts? But then the other side is obviously he is a incredibly rich man.
He doesn't need this stuff.
No, and it's hard for me to believe that he even registered one. I guess that was just for the sake of registering, just to go have some fun with his fiance, just because, you know, that's what people do when they get married. But I personally think he should, I don't know if he should give the gifts back, but I think he should set up some kind of charity, like you were saying, and give the money to someone that's something that's more deserving.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. But it's a really interesting situation because Robert didn't even put the registry out there for people to find.
No,
like,
but people were.
Yeah. Well, what happened is when it first came out that he was registered at certain places, a bunch of media websites said, hey, here's the link to his registry. So really, the media is the only one involved in this whole thing. First, they put his registry out there, and then they criticized people and him for giving and taking gifts. So I think it's the media's fault.
I honestly think it's sad that he even asked his family to go register for gifts for him, to
That's
be honest
true.
With you. I think if I made that kind of money, there's no way I'd be asking charity from anyone.
So. Yeah. Yeah, it's got to be hard to shop for NFL players, especially at Christmas time and all that.
Absolutely.
Like, what do you give the guy that has everything?
Yeah, and he's able to have everything. And, you know, you give him some $20, $25 gift, and he turns around and gives you a $1,000 watch or something, you know, because it's the same percentage, same, you know, margin to him as it is to you. So,
yeah.
Interesting situation for a guy who is very loved and respected around the league. So.
Definitely. And it's interesting to see him have a little bit of controversy that, you know, he really hasn't had so far.
I honestly, as a Cowboys fan, I love any type of situation that adds unwanted controversy or unwanted publicity to a rival team.
Yeah, especially the whole Redskins debate that's going on. If it should be Redskins or Red Tails or whatever.
Anything that keeps their mind off football is good news for Cowboys fans.
Yeah, and I think that'd be a good thing to tackle later on in our show, is to talk about, maybe not today, but talk about that whole Redskins versus another name change. And there's a few other franchises that are changing their names as well, such as the New Orleans Pelicans now, and the Charlotte Bobcats may want the Hornets' name back. But that's all beside the point. We're talking about RG3 here. So I think that's about all we really want to talk about for
speaking,
him.
Speaking of NFC East,
okay,
what are your predictions for the NFC East as far as your record goes, where you see teams placing? Because this is a division where there's really no powerhouse team, but a lot of teams that you could see winning 8 or 9 games, which, you know, someone's got to fall off.
That's true. I honestly think that the Giants will make the playoffs and get the divisional title.
How many wins will that take for them to get there?
I think 10 is all you need.
Okay.
I think 10 could easily win the division.
So you see them winning 10 games?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think Cowboys finish in second place and maybe get the wild card. I'm not sure what the wild card's going to be, because it's usually 10 or 11 wins.
Right.
But I think they are a game behind the Giants, maybe. They go 9-7.
Because a lot of people are saying the Cowboys aren't going to win more than 8 games. 8 games until proven otherwise.
Right. I think they could do it. I think they could get the wild card. And then I see the Redskins just being right behind them, like maybe the last game that they play each other, the Cowboys get that wild card and knock the Redskins out.
So you see the Eagles kind of doing what they did last year with their new coach, Chip Kelly, in there. You don't see anything spectacular happen?
Well, I mean, there's so much unknowns. There's unknowns at the quarterback position, unknowns on the line. Defense, safeties have been just destroyed. Like, Nandy Asamoah is not there anymore. There's just a whole lot of questions. A whole lot of questions with Chip Kelly. I mean,
right?
Not the most honest guy out there.
Right. I actually see. I kind of agree with you for the most part on your list. I think the Giants probably end up winning the division similarly to this season. Maybe
right.
Real close race down to the end.
Mm-hmm.
I do see the Cowboys winning 9 or 10 games, though.
I do
think they beat the 8 mark and. I think they squeak in to a wild card position. However, I think the Redskins and the Eagles both drop off this year. You saw the emergence of the Redskins last year. I don't see them being able to maintain that. I think a lot of people will figure out, you know, every time there's a new type of offense, it gets figured out pretty quick. So let's see what happens when defenses now have a year to study Robert Griffin. They have a year to study his game. Let's see what happens to their offense now. I think they drop off 6 or 7 wins. I think the Eagles are pretty close to that, 5, 6, 7 wins.
Okay. Well, let's talk some other NFC East news as well. We just got a report before the show started that Tony Romo had back surgery as of today. Now, that's going to put him out for the next 3 weeks or so, which means he will miss the mini camp that's coming up pretty soon.
Right.
But he should be back in time for training camp. And
he's saying he'll be back. They were able to keep this
super
unbelievably
secret.
Quiet. And so kind of controversial topic off this is Romo is getting a lot of praise this offseason for how much time he's been spending in the
film room.
In the film room, and dedicated and all that kind of stuff. And he decided not to play golf, and he kind of let everybody give him the credit that he's just taking things more seriously now.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it seems now that he just wasn't able to play golf.
Yeah.
And that, but if you're Tony Romo or part of Tony Romo's camp, are you going to squash any time, you know, if something comes out, someone giving Tony Romo credit for once, giving him that, even if it's undeserved, are you going to squash that? And they just, you see, they've just let him have that, but now it's kind of backfiring.
Yeah. I think it's going to be an interesting few weeks to see how Tony recovers from this and where he is just mentally after the surgery.
The back is a very big surgery, and it can mess with your mechanics and footwork, and so it'll be interesting. He's going to need that time in camp to get back on the right page, and to get back on the right page with his receivers, his new receivers, his new tight end. So there's a lot of new stuff on the offensive end that Tony Romo needs to be there for. But we do have a reliable backup in Kyle Orton. I think he's one of the best backups in the league.
Oh, for sure.
So happy to have him fill in. I think he's a proven veteran. So.
Yeah, and I look forward to it. Now, I've just got three breaking alerts that I want to read off real quick because they're all really important. First, San Francisco won the 50th Super Bowl in 2016 over Miami. And then Houston won the 51st Super Bowl in 2017. So Miami was the second place for both of those, so they didn't get either Super Bowl bid. And then the other thing I want to report, all three of these from SportsCenter, the Clippers have just fired Vinny Donegro.
No, okay, man, that's unfortunate news, as you heard us talk last week about the possibility of Chris Paul coming to the Mavericks. That all kind of hinged on whether Vinny stayed in LA or not. We thought if Vinny stayed, Chris left. That doesn't mean he won't leave. It was a disappointing season regardless of the coach. Mm-hmm. Chris Paul was expecting a lot more, so still could leave. However, that is unfortunate news for Mavericks fans.
You would think, that's good for the Clippers, but it's not good for the Mavericks now.
No, and I thought we needed to get a guy like Chris Paul to bring anybody else in. He would have been kind of our bargaining. You get him in, all of a sudden you have Dwight Howard wanting to come there. You have a lot of people wanting to come to Dallas at that point.
Yeah, I mean, I still think it's a good chance that he leaves the Clippers, but it's not nearly as high.
The percentage has definitely dropped now. Yeah. I think there's a 30% chance he leaves now.
Right. Well, let's talk a little about the Super Bowl picks that I gave, though. So we've got San Francisco with their brand new arena that's just going to open up that year is going to have the 50th anniversary Super Bowl. And San Francisco, I think, could play in that.
Absolutely.
They're one of the very few teams to ever have a chance to play in their own Super Bowl.
Of course, a lot of people thought the Cowboys would be playing in there. And that season tanked.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens.
Miserably. But good for them.
Yeah.
Good for the league, I think, too.
Yeah, so. And good for the Houston Texans the next year. They got 51.
Absolutely,
which would be great for Texas. Brings a lot of revenue. And I don't think they'll have near as much controversy as Jerry Jones did when he promised all those seats and then didn't deliver.
I think they'll
come through with that at least. So we'll see what happens. You know, it's still, 3 years away?
Yeah, we've still got quite a lot of time. Houston could be horrible by then. Cowboys could have won three Super Bowls in a row. So
yeah, you never know. They could be playing at Super Bowl 51 in Houston, and we have a huge home field advantage.
I guarantee you I'll be there for that.
Yeah.
I will drive. I will make a road trip to Houston for that one.
Okay. Depending on where we are, anyway. Yeah. If you know you're working in Washington, D.C. or something.
I'll make it down.
All right.
It's guaranteed to my fans.
All right. Well, that's about going to do it for us in this first segment. When we come back, we're going to talk NBA playoff action and the NBA draft lottery, which both happened tonight. And then we'll finish off with a little bit of Rangers talk and maybe an NHL playoff update from our news director here at the station, Mark Hazlett, who's a big Chicago Blackhawks fan. All right. This is KHR's Locker Room. We'll be right back. Welcome back to KETR's Locker Room. Cooper Welch and Ryan Bilbs here with you once again. All right, Bilbs, so we already talked RG3 getting married and all the controversy surrounding that. Not his actual marriage ceremony, but, you know, what's going on with the gifts and stuff like
registry
that.
Registry and all that.
Yeah, and obviously there's no controversy about him getting married. That's all great. And we talked a little bit of Tony Romo back surgery, talked Super Bowl locations. You know, you heard all this. You don't need to be reminded. So let's get into the next part of the show. The Spurs are up 1-0 over the Grizz after a very impressive performance on Sunday. As a Spurs fan, I think it's super impressive when they beat the Grizzlies 105-83. So first, what happened in that game?
You saw the Grizzlies come out and just completely be overwhelmed by the Spurs and what mm-hmm. the Spurs game plan was. I predicted this to happen. I think the Spurs win this series pretty handily. Memphis was the hot team coming in. Spurs just have so much experience, and they really it is a good matchup in this series. I think yeah. the teams match up well, which I think favors the Spurs. Predictions for this series, Cooper?
You know, I had said earlier that I thought the Grizzlies were going to beat them just because, the Memphis always come real tough. They defend well. They're great scoring on the inside, and the Spurs don't really match up with big men, or at least they didn't. And we saw that in the 2011 series when there was so much going right for the Spurs, and they hit this bandsaw of the eight-seeded Memphis Grizzlies and lost that series in six games. So what's different about this year? I think the Spurs have a lot more big men presence. They got Tiago Splitter to really mean something for the Spurs. And they have Boris Diaw, who they didn't have in 2011. Just a lot of really good work from them. Really impressed from what those two big guys are doing for the Spurs. And then they also have Manu Ginobili back, and he's not hurt. The last time they played in the playoffs, Manu Ginobili had a broken arm. You can't really play basketball well with a broken arm.
Right.
So I think that really helps having him back. Now, so far in the playoffs, Manu hasn't shot very well at all. He's been uncharacteristically terrible from the free throw line. He's only shot, I think, around 60% compared to his career average around 80%. But we've seen a lot of improvements in that game one. What we really saw happen was the Spurs shooters were constantly passing the ball to the open man, rebounding, just out-hustling the Grizzlies. The Grizzlies were slow on rotation defense. It just seemed like they put too much commitment to Tony Parker and not enough to the outside shooters. And that's why the outside shooters made a franchise record 14 three-pointers in that game. Now, as a prediction, tonight, game two is at 8 on ESPN. And I think that the Grizzlies will rebound but not win the game. I think it's very close.
Mm-hmm.
But
see, they come out with a little bit more energy tonight. And
maybe even lead most of the game. But I think the Spurs will still win it. I think it'll be 2-0 for the Spurs when they head to Memphis. But then I think Memphis can really get their train going, especially if they build a lot of momentum tonight and get a really close game. Now, if Memphis wins tonight, I think it's a whole new series, and I think game one doesn't even matter. And we've seen so far Memphis has really started off slow in each of their series, getting blown out by 20-plus points to the Clippers in the first game and then winning four straight to advance that series. And in Oklahoma, they lost the first game and then won the next four straight. So maybe we're seeing something of a pattern here as they try to figure out what's going on in each series. So I think game two is going to be the really pivotal one that really decides the series.
Yeah,
for
if
them.
Memphis can steal one from San Antonio, that really puts it in their favor at that point. But I think Spurs come out. I think they win the series in five or six.
Okay. All the experts so far are saying that it's going to be a full seven-game series with each team winning at their home court. And I'd kind of be pretty close to agreeing with them because Memphis hasn't lost a single game at home this postseason, and the Spurs have only lost one. I think they're 6-1 now. So it'll just be interesting to see what happens. But I think it's going to be a very close series, a very fun series to watch for those that you like physical, rough and tumble, low-scoring basketball. I think that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to the Miami and Pacers series. It starts tomorrow at 7:30 on TNT. Now, we already talked about this a little bit. The series doesn't start until tomorrow. Now, the Spurs started on Sunday, so why such a delay here?
Yeah, it's weird that they're starting so late, but San Antonio doesn't play again until, I think, Friday is their next game, so they'll get a break as well. With this series, Miami versus Pacers, initially, I thought the Knicks were going to be playing the Miami here, and I thought the Knicks would win that series.
Okay.
Now that the Knicks are out, I don't think Indiana will win. I do think it'll be an incredible series. So I see this series going 6 or 7. Indiana doesn't have the star power, doesn't have the incredible, you know, scoring talent like Miami does, but they play hard. They play, I mean, in-your-face basketball, and they're going to frustrate the heck out of Miami.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an incredible series. Miami goes on, plays the Spurs in the championship.
Okay. You know, I think I pretty much agree with you here. Just a few things to talk about. The Pacers in the regular season beat the Miami Heat 2-1 in the three games that they played, and then took the Heat to 6 in their last playoff matchup last season. And no one expected them to do that last season. So I think it'll definitely be an interesting playoff series, like you said. But I think what will really matter to this playoff series is who the refs are. Because we saw when the Pacers beat Miami the first time, they got super physical. They fouled a lot, but the refs didn't call a lot of the fouls that they had against LeBron and against D-Wade and Chris Bosh and all the others. So I think the biggest point in this series, the thing that's going to determine who goes to the finals in everything, is going to be the refs. Who's reffing tonight or tomorrow night in the next game?
If the refs let the fouls go,
yeah,
Indiana wins this series.
Easily. Yeah.
I don't think they will. I think there's too much hype around Miami. I think the league needs Miami to be there in the finals, publicity-wise.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I do think that if maybe one game is not called well, I think the refs go under scrutiny and they call it pretty tight the rest of the way.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just think about how terrible the TV ratings would be if it was the Spurs-Indiana Pacers series. I would love it. Every minute of it, I'd be like, yeah. But I know most of the league would hate it, just as like they hated the Cleveland-San Antonio series. That was the lowest-rated NBA playoff game series ever in the history of the NBA. Now, Indiana and San Antonio series would be worse than that because they don't have LeBron James. They don't have the star power. Right. San Antonio would be the most popular team in that, and they're not very popular across the league. So I think for the league, as you said, Miami needs to be in this, and it'll all be determined, like we both said, by the refs. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens tomorrow night. That's 7:30 on TNT. The Spurs and Grizz play game 2 tonight at 8, just in case you missed that, and that'll be on ESPN. Now, Bilps, the other thing we have to talk about in the NBA is the draft lottery, which is coming up tonight at 7:30.
Very, very excited to see what the Mavs do here.
So here's the 14 teams that are going to be in the NBA draft lottery tonight, and that each have at least a little bit of a chance at getting the top pick. Orlando is the highest chance to get the best pick. Charlotte is second. Cleveland is third. Phoenix is fourth. New Orleans is fifth. Sacramento 6th, Detroit 7th, Washington 8th, Minnesota 9th, Portland 10th, Philadelphia 11th. 12th is Oklahoma City because they got a protected pick from someone else, so they've got that draft lottery pick. 13th is Dallas, and 14th is Utah. So now those are, you know, I'm actually not sure that Oklahoma City thing is right. I think that might be a mistake. We'll have to check on that later, and we'll update this on the website when we get it posted. But those are the teams, at least according to this, that have a good chance of getting the number one overall pick tonight. Now, let's talk about why the NBA lottery draft happens and why it's done as a lottery instead of as the normal, your record determines who gets the first pick.
Yeah, it is strange the way the NBA does it, and they have come under a lot of scrutiny over the years because you'll see teams that, you see the Mavericks down here at 14th with a 43-39 record, or I'm sorry, 41-41 record, and then you have a team like Orlando with a 20-62 record.
Yeah.
Now Orlando has a much better chance of getting the first pick. Dallas still has a chance to get it. I mean, the chances of that are very, very small.
Chance.
Very, very small. But you see teams, you know, you see teams that are going to be bad for a lot of years in a row because they might get that first lottery pick every year but never get the first draft pick, and a lot of times especially in the NBA you only have one draft pick that's really gonna, you know, your Kevin Durant's, or you only have that first draft pick's a lot of times the only one that's really gonna matter in that top position.
So,
I honestly wish they'd switch to a system where the worst team gets it and so on.
Okay. Do you think that would encourage tanking, though, like we see in the NFL?
Well, I mean, you still see tanking regardless. Okay. I mean, you still have a better chance being the worst team. I mean, you see Orlando, 25% first chance pick, and then you have Charlotte, who only won one more game than them, have a 19% chance. So there is a big difference there.
That's true.
And then the Cleveland with three extra wins, 15% chance. So there is a big difference there. So I still think you'll have the tanking issues regardless.
Okay.
But maybe on a more extreme level.
Well, let's talk who's got the best chances tonight. We already said Orlando's got the best chance at 25% overall for the first overall pick. And then for the second overall pick, they've got a 21.47% chance and then a 17% chance for the third pick. So Orlando has a 64% chance of getting the top three. Now, compared to the only other team that we'd really care about on this list, Dallas, that's a pretty good chance because Dallas only has a 2.18% chance of getting any of the top three.
And that's why it's frustrating because they do have a 2% chance. So for fans out there, that is extremely frustrating to see all these teams, 8 through 14 that have a legitimate shot at stealing one of those top three picks.
Right. Well, let's also talk about what happened last year with the NBA draft. A lot of people said that David Stern somehow rigged the lottery so that the New Orleans Hornets, who were owned by the NBA during that time, could get the best overall pick. What do you think about that?
Who knows? I've thought the NBA has been rigged for a long time. Well, actually, I've thought the NBA was rigged since the 2006 NBA Finals. However, nothing really would surprise me, to be honest with you. I personally don't think it's rigged. However, you do see, pick 8 through 14, there's a 30% chance, or close to it, a 30% chance that one of those 8 through 14 gets a top three pick. And I think that's a mistake on the NBA's part.
Yeah.
But as far as the Mavericks go, I think some possibilities for them. I would like them to. There's a couple different people that they're talking about possibly drafting.
Okay.
You hear guys like Dario Saric out of Croatia. He's a small forward, 6'10". Has ball handling skills. He's basically just one of those guys that they think, will be an immediate impact, one, but also is just one of those guys that can help the guys around him.
Mm-hmm.
Someone that you can train under Dirk Nowitzki in Dirk's last years, and maybe a similar type player, being so big and having the ball skills that he does. There's also guys like Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, shooting guard out of Georgia. They've talked about Cowboys possibly getting
Mavericks.
Mavericks possibly getting just a couple different guys. There's a point guard out of Germany. They've talked about drafting. So you really never know what's going to happen tonight. One, because you don't know what pick they'll be.
Yeah,
that's frustrating for the Mavs, GM room there, because they have no idea what they're supposed to do tonight.
Yeah, they've got all sorts of different strategies. Now, if they got one of the top three picks, who do you think they would target then?
I'd like to see them go after Trey Burke, personally. Okay. That's just me. If you have the first pick in the draft, you're probably going to take
New Orleans Noel
or Ben McLemore.
Yeah.
But if you fall maybe two or three, you look at probably taking point guard because that's a need position.
Yeah, because they honestly don't really need a center as much as they need a good point guard to handle the ball and take care of it for them. Now, all this is moot if they somehow got Chris Paul before the NBA draft. Then it would be like, of course we need a center. Let's draft Norman Noel. But, I mean, all of it's up in the air. And I think that's one exciting thing about the NBA lottery draft is you never know what's going to happen.
And it goes both ways, too. It's not just that they can move up. They could also move down.
Yeah.
So, interesting times for Mavs fans tonight.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting. And we'll definitely have an update on that on Friday when the next show comes out. Now, let's move on to our last topic for the show. The Rangers, what's going on with them? Now, they're 29 and I think 16, if I remember right. Yeah, they're 29 and 16. Yeah,
they lost to
the A's last night.
A's yesterday. and they pitched a I don't know if there's another team in baseball that have pitched more pitchers as a starting pitcher. They pitch Lindblom.
Yeah, Josh Lindblom, who is another rookie. So now the Rangers have...
He got blew up.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he did pretty well.
He didn't do horrible, but he did give four or five runs up pretty early. And when that happens, you see Ron Washington bring in relievers that he is just putting out there. He knows that they're not his best chances because his team's in a pretty improbable position to win the game at that point.
Now, here's the frustrating thing for me. We've seen relievers like Joe Ortiz come in and other relievers like that and just throw the game away. Both him and Derek Lowe have a terrible ERA. Derek Lowe's at 9.00 now so far. And I'm a little bit frustrated with our relievers pitching. Now, the starting pitching, honestly, I think has been about where you'd want to see it for three starting rookies, especially. But we've had a lot of problems with our relief pitching. Now, we've still got Sheppers in there and Robbie Ross.
Those guys are playing out of their mind.
Playing great. And we've got, of course, Joe Nathan, who has not blown a save yet, if I remember right. But all that goes to say, relief pitching overall isn't really where I'd want to see it.
Yeah.
So,
and last night you didn't see the bats as hot as they've been lately.
Mm-hmm.
You did, however, see Profar. He had his debut last night, Jerkson Profar. Mm-hmm. He didn't get a hit, but he produced a couple different runs. I think he had a ground out that got us a run, and I think he had a pop fly to center that got us a run as well. So, nice to see him get in there and sacrifice himself and get us some points.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be
get us some runs.
Interesting to see what happens with him, especially since Kinsler's down on the 15-day DL. That's why he came up.
Right, and so I'm excited to see what he does in this.
Yeah.
And Kinsler has been playing out of his mind this season, so I don't think you'll see fans screaming for Profar, even if Profar plays, if Profar plays out of his mind in this next, 10, 15, or, 8 or 9 games.
Yeah.
You might see the fans screaming for him to find a spot on the team.
Be traded.
Yeah, but I don't think you'll see fans wanting Kinsler out.
Yeah,
Kinsler has been so great. Oh. Before the season, Kinsler went under a lot of heat, but he's really shown up and played like an all-star.
It'll be very disappointing, I think, if Kinsler doesn't come back at some point during the season.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, well, that's about going to do it for us on this Tuesday, May 21st. But we will be back on Friday, and we're going to talk quite a lot more NBA action and really see what else is going on in the sporting world. We don't really know what's going to happen just yet. We're not fortune tellers or anything like that. But we try to do our best, right, Phillips?
That's right.
All right. Well, we'll be back on Friday, like I said. And this is KETR's Locker Room. I'm Cooper Welch.
Ryan Phillips.
We'll see you on Friday.